Welcome to Gardening Naturally with Jeff Ferris. Call or text Jeff now with your gardening and landscape questions. 512-836-0590.
Hey, good morning, gardeners. Welcome back, or welcome to Gardening Naturally. Nice day to be outside. Breezy. Yeah, I know it's springtime. Kite Festival is today, I believe. They're going to have plenty of wind. I'm not a big fan of it. I like the breeze because it can keep you cool, but I couldn't make it on living on a coast. Too much wind all the time. Just not what I'm looking for. Anyway, nice day to be outside. But speaking of wind, you know, wind dries out the soil, and wind will actually dry out your plants. When you have this constant breeze blowing over the plants, it's actually, technically, it's creating what's called a pressure imbalance, and the plant's using more water than normal. So if you have container plants especially, but almost all plants in your garden, in your vegetable beds, in constant wind like this, you're losing water. So you may want to go out there and check on them. You don't want them to, you know, suffer to wilt because of the lack of water. Windy days cause evaporation. You may have to water more frequently just to keep up with the breeze. Remember, touch the soil. Don't guess. Is the soil still wet when you put your finger in it? If it is, your plant may not look the best, but it has water available to it. If you stick your finger in the soil and it's dry, well, you need to water. Let's go to the phone. This is James. James, what can I help you with?
Yeah, hi, Jeff. Hey, I've got, speaking of mulch, I've got a bunch of limbs that I've trimmed out of my trees and was wondering, do you know of any places that I could go to drop these things off that wouldn't charge an arm and a leg?
Ooh. Well, if they charge you an arm and a leg, they're going to run that arm or a leg through the grinder anyway. So, listen, deep woods, I'm in Round Rock. Says here you're in Leander.
Yes.
The cities. Many of the cities have drop-offs. I don't know what they may or may not charge for them. Here in Round Rock, they would charge you by the trailer. So if you were pulling a trailer and it was covered with limbs and you wanted to drop them off so they could grind them, there was a flat fee for it. But you wound up getting it all ground up and somebody got to use it and you don't have that mess anymore. I don't know of any place other than the city places that will accept those branches to get rid of. So you may have to call around, and it may, well, you'll have a problem that you're in Leander. If you call Round Rock, they're going to be like, yeah, we'll take those branches if you're a Round Rock resident. You have a Round Rock water bill, and you'll be like, no, I live in Leander. So you may want to call around first, but most of the cities, like here in Round Rock, we have both a recycling department and a forestry department. Either one of those should be able to answer the question for you. I don't know what they have for the city of Leander. Usually, they kind of run on the same theme. Because you're not the only guy who's wound up with a bunch of leftover branches that they need to get rid of.
Okay. Well, then I will go ahead and give them a call tomorrow and see if there's a place that I can haul these. I appreciate your answer, sir.
Yeah, and there are private places. There is a place, Texas Hardwoods, I think. They make Texas hardwood mulch. Austin okay. Woods, sorry. Sometimes you can drop off stuff there. I don't know if it's free. I don't know what they charge, but that's all they do. That's okay. all they do. They grind it. They have a special process they use, and they bag it and sell it retail. So there is another place you can check and see what they'll accept, if they accept anything.
Okay. And what was it called again? Austin Hardwood? Or
Austin? No, Austin Wood.
Wood. Okay. Okay. All right. Well, I will look them up and see about that as well then.
All right. Well, thank you. Good luck. And I'm glad you're doing this rather than just having a burn pile.
Right.
I live in a neighborhood where everybody had a burn pile. Yeah.
Okay.
And nobody does it anymore, thankfully. So
right.
Good luck with that, James.
All right. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to the phone. This is Bobby. Bobby, what can I help you with?
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for taking my call. First of all, there is a place, Texas Native Mulch, down in South Austin, right behind the airport, that will take a truckload. Used to be about $10, $12. Now it's $18 after inflation and COVID. So they will take a truckload of anything you got. Let's say a Tacoma or Tundra size. So.
There's also an Austin Wood, a place like you're describing, up here between Round Rock and Pflugerville. So if you live in Leander, that's probably closer than all the way down in South Austin. But I know the place you're talking about in South Austin.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I was calling about my my palm. Yeah, sago palm. Every year, the leaves get brown, and then I cut them back. And it's middle of April now, and they haven't leafed any new ones except for one little guy. And I thought I heard you yesterday say, wait until May or so. Does sago take a while for it to leaf out?
Yeah, it's not a particularly fast grower. So you may need to be a little patient yet to see if it'll put those leaves back on. Is it a well-established plant? Have you had it for a while?
Yes, sir. It has at least 15 pods.
Okay. Now, you know you can cut those pods off and start new sagos.
I tried that. I called you about it a couple years ago. I tried that, and I put it somewhere. I was not successful. I would love to do that successfully.
You can. Austin has a cactus society. If you contact them, you can find them austinorganicgardeners.org, I believe, is one place. You can also look on Facebook for them. They can give you really good instructions. Some may show you how to do it in return for a couple of the pups. So you can check with them to help you get that process down.
Oh, that's excellent. And thank you so much. Y'all look them up.
Thanks for the call, Bobby, and good luck. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. I got to take a quick break. I'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phone. This is Denise. Denise, what can I help you with?
Hi, good morning. I have a question about trailing lantana. I have planted purple trailing lantana in a container, raised container, and have had to replace it each year for the last 3 years. I was wondering if there is a hardier trailing lantana than purple. It gets about 6 hours of sun, up to 6 hours of morning sun. And it is in a container that I do protect in the wintertime, but it's just not coming back. And I thought, well, maybe purple's not the best or the hardiest trailing type lantana. I was wondering if you had a suggestion or had a site maybe I could go to look up hardiness. And it's not just cold hardy or something. Maybe it is cold hardy. I don't know. Environment.
Okay. There's a white trailing lantana, very, very similar to the purple one in size, mm-hmm. shape, et cetera. Now, when you say you've had to replace it every year, why? It's not coming back?
Correct. It's not coming back.
How much time have you given it to come back, that is?
Well, from this last year, it's still not coming back. There's still nothing coming up from the bottom of it, from the roots.
Got it. And what's your water routine? Since it's in a container, it can tend to get kind of wet. Trailing lantana won't really complain that much about it being wet, but it does need some water. Are you watering maybe at least weekly?
Oh, definitely. Watering weekly, being in a container, probably at least two or three times a week during the really hot days, daily. But
yeah.
During the not so hot days, like right now, we haven't received a lot of rain out here, but it's getting twice a week watering.
Okay.
And it is well-drained soil.
Good, good. That was going to be my next question. I don't know of one that's more hardy than the purple. I mean, that's a pretty good lantana, because if it were planted in the ground, I know you got it in a container, but if it were planted in the ground, it would spread pretty easily. So I'm not sure if the environmental conditions, like the nasty heat we got or the freeze or what is preventing it from coming back? There doesn't seem to be a real reason to stop it. It should be coming back for you. I can't recommend one over another in terms of their hardiness. To me, they're all pretty much the same. I actually have a problem where I get too many volunteer lantanas growing in various places throughout my property. I always have to cut them back. I don't know what's happening in your container that is not conducive to the lantana. The only other thing I can think of is size, but I'm going to assume you have a fairly large container that you're growing it in.
Right, right, I do. And it's never gotten very large.
Okay. No, I don't have an answer. Purple lantana should be something that you can do correctly in a container and grow as if it were in the ground. If that container's, I don't know, at least 2 or 3 gallon size container, that lantana should do just fine. I don't know what's happening with it that it will not come back for you.
Okay. I'll change out the soil and try the purple one again. Maybe it drains too quickly. In this container, I've had a problem with I can't remember what it is. It's a pointed leaf, variegated leaf plant, but I've had a problem with that too. And I just thought, well, it's either the lantana, I need a hardier one, but I wanted it trailing because it is raised. But even in the ground, my purple lantanas haven't done great here.
Okay.
All the others do, the confetti and the Texas lantana, all the others do wonderful and reseed, but the purple doesn't.
Man, I really don't have an answer. If your others are growing well, that one should grow well too. The only thing is if you're going to try it again, if you're going to pull out the soil, when you do so, really check, is the bottom super compressed? Is it a swamp when you get there and you didn't expect it? The only guess, and I make this a guess, is that it's too wet. Even though it seems like it could be draining really well, it may be getting too much water. Lantana is something that doesn't do bad in a drought, that actually likes the drier soil. So maybe, and I got nothing to back this up with, maybe it's staying a little too moist.
Okay. All right. I will check it. And the light, the amount of light, the fact that it doesn't get all day light is okay.
Yeah, I have in ground, don't have container anymore because I put it in the ground, but I have ones that are growing in they probably don't even get half a day of sun. Granted, it's western sun, so it's the brightest, hottest sun that they get, but they don't get 8 hours of sun a day.
Okay. All right. Well, I will give it a try again. I'll change out the soil and get a new plant and check on it. And if it's too wet in the bottom, I'll understand. And if it's very dry, then I guess I'll just try again this year. Maybe the winters have been too harsh with it in the container.
It's possible. I wish I had an answer for you, but I don't. You're growing something that should grow there just fine. I don't know why it's not.
Well, I appreciate your help very much. Thank you, and have a great day.
You too. Thanks, Denise. Folks, I got to take a quick break. Greg, I see you there. I'll catch you on the other side.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's see. Let's go to the phone. This is Greg. Greg, what can I help you with?
Good morning, Jeff. Got a question about putting out new sod. I put out a couple of pallets of Bermuda just recently, a couple of weeks ago. Got everything spread, nice undersoil and so on. The retail outlet told me that at their farm down on the coast, the Bermuda had been treated with fertilizer, but I don't know how much or at when. And what I'm wondering now is whether or not I should fertilize the new sod that I've got put out.
Okay, good question. Generally speaking, they do have a way to fertilize it, then they cut it and bring it to you.
Right.
You can fertilize now. Use one of the dry granules is surprisingly the easiest way to do this because it won't stuff the grass with fertilizer in one instant. If you use one of the dry granulars, every time you water or every time it rains, it's going to melt that fertilizer into the soil to feed that grass. So you can't overfeed using a dry fertilizer. You don't need a super high number. That's the funny thing. Grass doesn't need ridiculously high amounts of nitrogen to grow well. And because you have new Bermuda, you actually want to have kind of a more balanced formula so that those roots will grow and attach them to the soil that you laid the sod on. So you get a good tight bond with the soil and let those roots grow. Nature's Creation has one that is like 612. Medina has ones that are a good formula for fertilizing. You can still find 824 fertilizer, and it works really well also. But a dry, not super high numbers will dissolve as you water and when you get rain, and that will feed the turf nice and slow. You do this again.
Sounds good.
You do this again, end of September, middle of October.
Okay, sounds great. I really appreciate your help. I enjoy listening to your show and pick up a lot of tips. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call, Greg. I'm glad I'm giving out some tips. You know me, I'm labor averse. So I'm trying to give out tips to help you garden with a lot less work. Let's go to the phone. Hey, it's Jeff. Jeff, what can I help you with?
Hey, Jeff, it's Jeff. You know, on that same, and I tuned in late, so, but this year I did something a little different. I did corn gluten, and instead of using a broadcast, I actually did a drop spreader and trying to really concentrate. So I did that basically the 1st of March into February, and back on the previous conversation, but I've been following for years and years the Cheryl McLaughlin, you know, I don't fertilize until after this, really the second growing cut in April, mm-hmm. you know, towards the middle to the end of April. And I'm wondering, after putting it on much, putting down a good layer of corn gluten, do I need to go ahead and put another application of regular fertilizer, 824 or whatever, 611, whatever?
You know, we used to recommend, Texas A&M actually, that a good turf only needed like a pound of nitrogen a year. So they recommended splitting two feeding times, like you said, and I agree. After a couple of mowings, when you're sure the grass is growing, that's when you would feed in the spring. And in the fall, sometime, you know, our falls last longer and longer lately. Sometime in the middle of October, you would put the same application down again for the purpose of trying to grow out the roots so that you have good root growth during the winter for the plants to survive in. So, yeah, just twice a year is usually enough fertilizing. And I remember that. That's how I was taught. Once you've mowed it twice, then you can fertilize it.
Well, and the you know, since I know corn gluten, you know, does break down and is like a 911, mm-hmm. I'm just wondering whether or not I'm, you know, really, I know I'm, if I use a slow release, I'm doing okay with that. It's just the effectiveness of the corn gluten on the weed seeds is well over by now, but just I guess I'm just kind of looking at the fertilizing portion of the corn gluten as to whether or not I'm actually, and I have cut back on the amount of organic fertilizer I've been putting down for years, except for on one of the ladies I do stuff for that can't do her own yard anymore, but just, you know, that type of thing. So that's why I was just trying to make sure, am I overdoing it or underdoing it? You know what I mean?
No, you're not overdoing it, because when you use an organic fertilizer, it can sit in the soil and the plant only takes it up when it actually needs it. The organic fertilizers are not chemically configured to force the plant to absorb the fertilizer. And that means that when you put it down, you don't have a risk of burning your turf. Same with corn gluten. Both of those make themselves available. They don't actually flood the plant with nutrient.
Okay. Well, you know, that's the issue, is just trying to keep from overdoing it. I'm not worried about burning it since I've done the organic for 20 some odd years. It's just, you know, just trying to not, because the price of fertilizer has just gotten crazy, especially
yeah.
corn gluten.
Yes, absolutely.
So, okay, bud. Well, look, I appreciate the show, man. I appreciate your thoughts. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Yeah, folks, we tend to overdo it. believe it or not, plants don't need tons of fertilizer. Let's go to the phone. This is Bob. Bob, what can I help you with? Bob?
Morning, Jeff. Bob from South Austin. I got a question about Asian jasmine that I have. I cut a path through the middle of it to make for a stepping stone, and it took all the roots out right down to the ground level. Now I've got about 15 square feet of what I'm thinking is dead roots on one side of that pathway. Apparently, I disrupted the root structure when I put my pathway in. So now with all these dead appearing vines, do I leave them and hope that green will someday return, or cut them all out so that the green roots from adjacent can go into the dark soil?
They should come back on their
green
own.
Green roots from adjacent can go into the dark soil.
Yeah, they should come back on their
own. They should come back on their green roots from adjacent can go into the dark soil.
Bob, something's wrong here. We're in a loop. I may need you to call back. They should come back on their own. It's just a question of time. Not sure what's going on with the phone. Bob, but thank you for the call. Hope you got the answer. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. I got to take a quick break again. Jerry, I see you there. I'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phone. This is Jerry. Jerry, what can I help you with?
Hey, I've got a garden in the back of my yard, and I tested the pH, and it shows a number of 8, maybe a little more. So it's very alkaline. So I'm wondering, there are products that I've read about that are sulfur. Should I apply that to the garden? And if so, how?
Nope. Long story short, Central Texas soil is incredibly alkaline. Really doesn't matter where you are, unless you live in Bastrop. The thing about it, if you apply the sulfur, it's only going to make an incremental decrease in the pH of the soil. And it's not going to last very long. It won't hurt anything. It's not going to ruin anything, but you're not going to get the return you think or that you want from it. The number one way to reduce the pH of soil is to add organic matter. In other words, work in compost. As compost decomposes, you get all this soil biology who goes to eat it. It's food for those little critters. The way they eat it is to release. And of course, I'm going to blank out on what they do. They release enzymes. And these enzymes are incredibly acidic. So the more soil biology you have, the more organic matter you put into it, you will slowly decrease the pH of that soil. One of the second best things you can do is grow things in it. As those roots break up that soil, it provides a pathway for water, for oxygen, for nutrients, and that will be one way to lower the pH long term. Now, you're not going to do this in one season. You want to have a summer garden? Fine. Work some compost into the soil, but be consistent. Every season, you want to add compost to your garden. You want to work it in top 4 to 6 inches, and you want to plant plants in it that generally have big root structures. that will break down and lower the pH of your soil. And in reality, the plants we generally grow in Central Texas gardens, tomatoes, okra, eggplant, beans, peas, leafy greens, will do just fine at about a 7.8 or less. So you're still going to have a decent garden. The key is going to be making sure that you're keeping good active compost added to the soil every single season. And you will be amazed at the quality of soil you will have in no time at all. But there is no single throw this on and it's fixed type product.
Alrighty, I have some compost brewing. I'll give it a little more time, then I'll dig it in.
And it'll make a difference. It'll make a huge difference. Just remember, every time you pull a garden out, meaning you're ending the season, you need to replace that compost that those plants used. So this is a seasonal thing. About an inch is all you need on top. We're not talking truckloads of it. But about an inch every season, you will have amazing soil in no time.
Okay.
Roger, sounds like we got dropped. Sorry. Let's go to the phone. Roger, are you still there?
These thistles growing in my yard. I don't know if they're beneficial or not. They got a little yellow flower and they go to a puff. Just trying to figure out what they are and should I take them out or not.
Okay. Pros and cons. They're probably a type of thistle. Are thistles bad? They're pointy. They can be kind of ugly. And you're going to get a yellow flower that's going to produce a whole bunch of white seeds that blow off like a dandelion. The good part about it is beneficial insects love to lay eggs in it. You will see that if you look closely, you're going to find ladybugs growing in it. Other things, other wildlife, particularly our finches, like the red finch, the house finch, goldfinches, they love the seeds. So you will draw those in by leaving those growing. I have no doubt that they're ugly. I have them growing on my property. I let them grow in areas that aren't really out and exposed so that the birds have something to eat and that they produce a home for things like ladybugs. They are not bad. They just aren't the most attractive of plants growing in your yard.
Well, if they attract all the birds and the bugs and the good stuff, I'm just going to leave them there and let them grow for a while.
Yep. You will not regret it. And they really are beneficial. They have a real deep taproot, too, so they help break up the soil.
Okay. Well, that sounds good to me, Jeff. I appreciate the information. Thank you kindly.
Thanks for the call, Roger. Jimmy, we're running out of time here. Let me see if I can help you here. What do you need?
Okay, it's a real quick one, and thanks for taking my call. Okay, I have a really big red oak tree that I've been growing. I planted 30 years ago. My wife wants to put in a patio, and it's going to cover up about 50% of the shaded area, and I don't want to starve it on water because water won't run down in there. Yes or no?
Okay. If you're only covering 50% of the roots, that means the other 50% are getting the water. So you're at a lower risk of hurting the tree. Number two, are you going to put in concrete?
That's what she wants to do. I would rather put in stones with crushed granite in between so it still gets wet.
So it's still pervious, right. If you put in concrete, and you're really worried about it, I don't think you should be, there is a product called MGO, magnesium oxide. It is concrete that water can flow through. I don't think it's cheap, but you wouldn't have to do your entire bed in it. You could use it only around the tree, and maybe you do concrete, then switch to stone when you get close to the tree like you want. But even if you did solid concrete all the way, that tree should still survive. That tree should still keep growing.
Thank you.
You bet. Good luck. Hope turns out to be a beautiful deck. Jimmy, thank you for the call, folks. This is Gardening Naturally. Coming up to the top of the hour, I will talk to you all again next Saturday at 9 a.m.